Well, we're enjoying this little chat here with Jimmy very, very much. You know, you mentioned a young lady that I always admired, and you made quite a few pictures with her, Jimmy, Margaret Sullivan. And I can't, I'm trying to think of the name of the picture today. I'm knowing that you were going to be
on. Shop Around the Corner?
Shop Around the Corner,
that's
yeah.
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, Ernst Lubitsch.
That's
production.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was really digging way back. I was trying to think some of the early pictures of Jimmy. You remember one you made? It was a naval picture, as I recall.
Navy blue and gold.
Was that with Raymond Walburn? He was a captain, as I recall. Uh-huh. Virginia Bruce.
Oh, no. No, that was different. That was a musical.
That's right.
One called Born to Dance.
And you had a couple lines in there about a little patter about good morning, miss, and how are you, and how's the captain, not to mention...
Oh, I said much more than that. I actually sang. I haven't been asked to sing in a picture since, but I sang a thing. It was a Cole Porter score. I sang a thing called Hey Babe, Hi Babe, How You Doing Today, Babe.
That was a big hit song, too.
Big hit. I forget who the fellow that made it a hit. It sure wasn't me, but... and there were a lot of hits in that thing. I've Got You Under My Skin, that Virginia Bruce sang. You'd Be So Easy to Love. That I always say I introduced it. I introduced it, but then when I went to the preview... there was somebody else singing it. I was mouthing it, but somebody else.
Were you surprised when that happened?
I was pretty surprised. I wasn't sure it wasn't me, because I wasn't exactly... I hoped it was, but I was.
Did you ever find out who it was? Perry Como, maybe?
No. Now, who was it? Bert Eberle? Bert Eberle?
Bob Eberle.
Bob Eberle.
Bob Eberle was with Jimmy Dorsey, good singer. Yeah. Well, at least they flattered you. They picked a good one for you.
Yeah, they picked a good one.
Well, now, of course, if you want to... If you want to talk with Mr. Stewart and really get him to go on these days, you talk a little aviation with him. I think you can really. I would like to have been a mouse in the corner listening to a conversation between this full colonel right here in the Army, in the Air Force, Colonel James Stewart, and a fellow who, if they gave commissions in commercial aviation, would probably be a 7-star general, William A. Patterson of United Airlines. You two were together. They're practically inseparable when Jimmy's in town. And I have a hunch that between the two of you, you settled most of the problems of aviation for the next 100 years, didn't you, Jim?
Yeah, I think aviation is a funny thing about this. You can talk almost as much about airplanes and about flying as you can about acting. And you can lie almost as much about it.
Like golf and fishing, huh?
You know, and I think that's not only true of people interested in aviation, but if you'll think back about conversations of any kind that you've had, everybody seems to have an airplane story. They have a story about when they were on this airliner, and they were going so-and-so, and such happened, and they did so-and-so. I've never been in a group of people yet that everybody didn't have their own little private story about flying, which is a good thing, you know.
What is your feeling about aviation, we'll say, in the next 25 or 30 years? Commercial as well as, we'll say, military.
Commercially, I just agree with, people like Mr. Patterson and C.R. Smith. There's no question about what they believe. They believe that aviation is just starting.
Mm-hmm.
And with the jet airplane, this is really going to open up air travel to not just a few. It's amazing, I think, that 70% of the people in this country have never been up in an airplane. 70, that's a lot of, that's a big percentage, 70%.
It certainly is.
And these men feel that the jet airplane is going to get some of that 70%, and I have no doubt about it. I think that flying as a mode of transportation is just getting started, and it's really in the next 10 years. I would think that 70% is going to be cut in half.
No question about it, Jim. What about the military? How do we stand, in your opinion, we'll say, from what you think you know, or from what you maybe do know, with, we'll say, other major powers?
Well, militarily, I think as far as aviation is concerned, as far as the air power concept of our military organization, we're second to none by a million miles. We're the first power in the world. Military aviation, of course, is in sort of almost a state of flux now because of the importance that is being given to missiles. However, I think, as usually happens in a thing like this, of new breakthroughs, scientific breakthroughs, people get ahead of themselves. And although people are talking about the intercontinental ballistic missile as though it is a thing in being and something that is operational, the truth of the matter is it's not operational. It's not operational here, and it's not operational in Russia. And it won't be for quite some time. In the meantime, the heavy bomber, I believe, is our first line of defense. And we have the finest heavy bomber force that man has ever devised in the being of the Strategic Air Command. It's the most amazing military force that has ever been devised by man. It's not only the most powerful force, it actually is a force that speaks for peace more than anything that has ever been devised by man. And this is quite a combination. I think the Strategic Air Command has kept World War III from becoming a reality. I can't help feel that it will continue to do so.
Mm-hmm. All these things we have to take really seriously, because here's a man that we flew from New York to Paris with not too long ago on that long flight, as you recall.
Yes.
And
yes,
one of those early planes, so this fellow knows his business about aviation.
Tell me, where is the Spirit of St. Louis right now, Jim?
Well, you know, there were three of them built, and I got so excited about doing the picture and everything. I have a friend, Joe DeBona, who I've friend of mine for a long time, flyer, speed racer, as a matter of fact. And we found an old Ryan airplane up in Denver, out in the cow pasture. And I know some other fellows in flying that built this thing up and made a replica of the Spirit of St. Louis. So this was used in the picture, too. And I rented it to the movie company, and then at the end of the picture it reverted back to me. So I gave it to the Air Force Academy for their museum.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was a year and a half ago, but they haven't built the museum yet. And in the meantime, you can't just sweep an airplane under the rug, you know. So I've been paying rent for this airplane out at a hangar, and I've never had so much trouble giving a thing away. So if you know anybody that would like to have the Spirit of St. Louis, please contact me.
Have you talked very much to Lindbergh since the movie was made?
No, I just I remember when it opened in New York. I went to New York a couple of days after the opening, and I was sitting in the hotel room with Leland Hayward, the producer, and the phone rang, and it was Lindbergh. And he said a few words, but then he said, "Well, now we went to see the picture, but I'd like you to speak to my wife." So Mrs. Lindbergh went on. She said, "Well, she liked the picture very much. She said that they went with two of their children that were home, the rest were away, but they went down, bought tickets, the Radio City Music Hall, and sat, and one little girl."
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Pardon me for interrupting. Lindbergh had to buy tickets to see this movie?
He didn't have to, but he did. This is Lindbergh. Okay. He's not going to go and say, "Well, I'd better have to give me some passes." He went and to the ticket and office and bought them. Well, the little girl was very interested in it, of course, and if you'll remember, if you saw the picture, on the way across the ocean, I ran it icing conditions in the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
picked up a lot of ice and got closer and closer to the ocean, and he started throwing things out, and he felt sure that he was going to crash. And Mrs. Lindbergh said that the little girl, the little Lindbergh daughter, got farther up on the edge of her seat and farther up on the edge of her seat and got more excited and more excited. And of course, we were picking up more ice and getting closer to the water. And finally, the little girl couldn't stand any longer, and she turned to her mother and she said, "Mother, Daddy did make it, didn't he?" So that was sort of the Lindbergh appraisal of the picture, which I accepted.
And also a great portrayal by you.
Speaking of little girls, you have twin daughters. How old are they, Jim?
They're seven. Seven, and growing up.
How does it feel to have two rings in your nose instead of just one?
Well, that's double trouble, but I love it.
No question about it. I understand Mrs. Stewart's health is excellent.
Yes, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Jimmy, I wish we could talk everybody in America to seeing Bell, Book, and Candle. It's going to open at the Woods Christmas Day. The FBI story comes out. We'll be certainly watching for that one very, very anxiously. And I think that for a fellow like you to devote as much time as you have to our little opus here today is pretty wonderful.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I always do. And then the next time I'm through, I hope you'll invite me back.
Well, it's an open invitation, Jimmy.
Absolutely.
Believe me.
Jimmy Stewart, and thank you very much. Jimmy
thank
Stewart.
You, Jim.